Okay, so today we're diving into a pretty significant New York case, Campaign for Fiscal Equity, also known as CFEV State.
Right.
And we've got some really interesting sources for this one, a podcast guide specifically for law students,
Nice.
a pretty detailed case brief, and a standard case brief as well.
All right, well, let's break it all down.
Yeah, the goal is to really understand the main arguments here, the court's decision, and the kind of ripple effects it had on education in New York. This case is
Oh,
huge.
absolutely. You know, for anyone listening who's really into understanding like the nuts and bolts of the law and how it shapes big social issues, this is a perfect case.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're talking about funding for public schools. Talk about a big social issue, right?
Yeah.
So this case really digs deep into that. How fair is the system? How does it actually play out? You'll see how one lawsuit can actually shake up a whole state's approach to education funding.
And that's all centered around this central question that really kickstarted this whole legal battle. Did New York State drop the ball on their constitutional duty to give students in New York City a real shot at a sound basic education?
Exactly. And that's what it all boils down to.
So let's rewind back to the beginning. This whole thing started in 1993, right?
Yeah, 1993, that's when the Campaign for Fiscal Equity, CFE, teamed up with a bunch of other plaintiffs,
Okay.
you know, school districts, students, parents, and they slapped New York State with this lawsuit. Their main beef. The way New York funded its schools was shortchanging students in the city, especially minorities, and they said it was denying them what's called a sound basic education.
A sound basic education, right? And they weren't just talking in vague terms, were they? I mean, our sources go into some pretty stark examples of what these plaintiffs were seeing. Like, what kind of evidence did they bring to the table to back up these claims?
Well, they pointed to some pretty serious problems, right? In New York City schools, we're talking like classrooms bursting at the seams, textbooks so old they're practically antiques, and a serious lack of qualified teachers in tons of schools. They argued that this wasn't just a few isolated incidents, this was a systemic failure.
Right.
And they put the blame squarely on the state's funding model.
Okay, so this case goes to trial. What were the big legal arguments that the court had to wrestle with?
So there were two big ones that made it to trial. Number one, the one we've been talking about, right? The state violating the education article of the New York State Constitution. That's the part that spells out the state's duty to educate its people. And then number two, there were claims based on Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, specifically this idea of disparate impact.
Disparate impact. Yeah, that's a really key concept here.
Yeah.
But it's also super important to keep in mind the legal arguments that were tossed out early on. Our sources point that out specifically.
Oh, for sure. The trial court kind of narrowed things down right from the get-go. They dismissed any federal equal protection claims and anything under Title VI that alleged intentional discrimination.
Okay.
So that shifted the focus. The big questions became, was the state failing to meet its basic educational obligations under its own constitution? And was the funding system, even if it wasn't intentionally discriminatory, hitting minority students harder?
Right. And that takes us to what I think is a really crucial question here. What exactly is a sound basic education in the eyes of the law? Like, how do you actually define that?
Right.
And you can see why this definition is so important.
Yeah.
It becomes the measuring stick for the state's responsibility, and it sets the stage for all these future arguments about funding.
It's the million-dollar question, right? It
Yeah.
really is. The court had to pin down exactly what the state was constitutionally obligated to provide when it comes to education. In this case, they decided that a sound basic education meant giving kids the basics, literacy, numeracy, those communication skills you need to be a part of society, like voting or serving on a jury.
Interesting. And this definition wasn't completely out of left field, right? But it definitely signaled a change from an earlier interpretation of the law, right?
Exactly. The court drew a line in the sand comparing this case to Levittown v. Nyquist way back in 1982.
Yeah.
In Levittown, the court basically said, hey, the state's main job is to set up a system of public schools and fund it to some degree. They didn't really get into the nitty-gritty of whether funding was fair or if the quality of education within that system was good enough.
Gotcha. So in CFE, the argument was that just having a system isn't enough if the system itself is failing to deliver a decent education,
Right.
especially in certain districts like New York City. Like, that was the heart of their argument, right? It wasn't enough to just have schools. Those schools had to actually provide a quality education.
Exactly. CFE was saying, look, The education kids are getting in New York City is so bad, it doesn't even meet the bare minimum for them to function in society.
Okay, let's circle back to Title VI for a second.
Sure.
Our sources really emphasize the difference between disparate impact and intentional discrimination.
Yeah.
Can you unpack that a little bit for us?
Absolutely. So Title VI of the Civil Rights Act, it says you can't discriminate based on race, color, or national origin in any program that gets federal funding. That includes public schools, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this law covers two types of situations: actions that are deliberately meant to discriminate against a certain group, and policies that seem neutral on the surface but end up hurting minority groups more than others. That's the disparate impact we're talking about.
Got it. So in this case, knowing that New York City students were something like 80% minority, the legal argument was that?
The argument was that even if the state wasn't purposely trying to underfund schools in mostly minority areas, the way their funding system worked had that effect anyway.
Yeah.
It resulted in all those problems we talked about. Overcrowded classrooms, not enough resources, and ultimately it meant minority students were getting a worse education.
Okay, so this case winds its way through the legal system, finally landing at the New York Court of Appeals in 1995. What happened there?
Well, the court was split on this one.
Oh, really?
They didn't all agree. Judge Siparik wrote the majority opinion, and they sided with the plaintiffs. They said New York State's school funding system was breaking the education article of their constitution. But the fact that there were dissenting opinions, that tells you something. It shows how deeply divided people were, and still are, about what the government owes its citizens when it comes to education.
That's interesting. So what were the key points the majority emphasized in their ruling?
They zeroed in on the bare necessities for a decent education. They talked about having school buildings that weren't falling apart, enough qualified teachers, and the basics like desks, textbooks, and staff who knew what they were doing. And they said that the lack of these things in New York City schools was proof that the state was failing to live up to its constitutional duty.
So, not a unanimous decision, though. Our sources mentioned some pretty significant dissenting opinions.
Yeah, there were some strong voices on the other side. Judge Simons, for example, he argued that the state had done its part by setting up a school system and giving it some money. He didn't think the state was responsible for guaranteeing specific results for every student or making sure funding was equal across all districts.
Mm-hmm.
He was worried about judges getting too involved in how the state spends its money, you know, that separation of powers thing.
Right, right.
And then you had Judge Smith, who disagreed specifically about the equal protection claim that got thrown out earlier. He thought there was enough evidence to suggest the state was intentionally discriminating against minority students with its funding choices. He thought that claim should have been allowed to move forward in court.
Interesting. And then there was also a concurring opinion, right? Someone who agreed with the final decision but had a slightly different take on defining a sound basic education.
Right, Judge Levine. He agreed that the state had violated the Constitution, but he preferred a narrower definition of sound basic education. He was more focused on basic literacy and math skills, not so much on the broader idea of being able to participate in civic life. But even with that stricter definition, he still thought the problems in New York City schools were bad enough to be unconstitutional.
Gotcha. So even with those different viewpoints, the majority opinion in CFE v. New York ended up having a big impact, right?
Oh, without a doubt. It was a game changer. It established, once and for all, that education in New York State isn't just a privilege, it's a fundamental right guaranteed by their constitution. And that forced the state to take a long, hard look at how it funded schools and make some serious changes. But our sources point out that actually putting those changes into practice, well, that was a whole other battle.
Right. Years of legal wrangling.
Exactly.
It also brings up this fascinating interplay between state constitutional law and federal claims like Title VI.
Totally. Even though the claims of outright intentional discrimination under federal law didn't go anywhere, the disparate impact theory, based on the way Title VI regulations are interpreted, that actually held up. It shows you how different legal strategies can be used to tackle issues of fairness, and how the bar for proving your case can be different depending on which route you take.
Mm.
For anyone studying law, especially civil rights law, this case is like a textbook example of how these different types of legal claims play out in the real world.
All right, so let's wrap up with some key takeaways for our listeners. We've got this specific definition of a sound basic education that the court landed on, those core skills you need to participate in society. We talked about the crucial difference between disparate impact, which looks at the effects of a policy, and intentional discrimination, which looks at the intent behind it. And it's important to remember those dissenting opinions, those different viewpoints from the judges about how far the state's responsibility for education really goes and what role the courts should play in all this. And then, of course, there's the real-world impact this case had on how schools in New York are funded and the bigger debate about how to make sure every student gets a fair shot at a good education.
Absolutely. This wasn't just an academic exercise. This had real consequences. And Campaign for Fiscal Equity v. New York, it's a powerful example of how a lawsuit can be a tool for change. It can force us to confront systemic inequalities that are baked into our institutions and to redefine what we consider basic rights. It tells us that when we say basic education, we're not just talking about what's taught in the classroom. We're talking about having the resources and the environment that make real learning possible.
I think that's a perfect place to leave it. But one last thought for everyone listening.
Okay.
Taking into account all the different opinions we've heard from the judges and all the ongoing discussions about school funding and educational equity, what do you think is the most important part of a sound basic education today? And how can the legal system be used to make sure every student gets that, no matter who they are or where they come from?
That's the big question.
This case cracked open the door, started these important conversations. Now it's about figuring out those next steps on the road to real educational equity for everyone.
I couldn't agree more.
All right. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.
My pleasure.